Donating your car or boat is an excellent way to help KPFK stay alive and on air. All you have to do is call 877-KPFK-AUTO. That's 877-KPFK-AUTO, and we'll take care of everything.
You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. The time now is 1 p.m.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and around the world on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting every Saturday from 1 to 2 p.m. here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles for over 52 years. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. Go to AutoWeek.com, click on my articles, and leave upbeat comments. Thank you very much. I am joined this week and every week by my favorite co-host in the world, our staff attorney specializing in automotive law, a Motor Press Guild member, and owner of not one but two Mazdas, a Miata and an RX-8, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. Great to be back here on the air with you and all of the news we are about to unveil for our listeners.
All the news that fits on the radio in 58 minutes. This week, we're joined by current automotive journalist, one-time car salesman for, it's a long list, BMW, Honda, Saab, Volvo, one-time management roles at Ferrari and Lotus franchises. He was even the Suzuki PR guy for one glorious minute. Please welcome everybody's pal, David Bolt.
Good to be here, Mark, and nice to meet you, Michelle.
This is David's debut here on the show. So, you know, no pressure, David, no pressure. You know, I'm hovering over the button. There's a big red button. I'm hovering over it. So, you know, no swearing. Okay.
No, it's very nice to be here.
Yeah, David came from our friend Roosevelt Gist's show for many years back, back east. Roosevelt's from Maryland, I think. See what you recorded in Maryland?
Well, originally, but recording from South Carolina.
South Carolina. Okay. Good guy. Good friend to all of us in the automotive journalism field. And welcome, David, to the show. Don't screw it up. Okay. David, tell us, first of all, what was it like being a car salesman?
Well, I sold BMWs to begin with. And yep. I like to think that I sold BMWs because I was enthusiastic about the product. From 79, when I joined a showroom in the Dallas area as a sales assistant, through 86, I think, I was selling BMWs. And in the last couple of years, I was selling BMWs and Ferraris. At the BMW Ferrari location, I transitioned into management. And I think in retrospect, this was the mid-80s. I think in retrospect, you could suggest I peaked too early. The owner of the dealership and I really didn't see eye to eye on the retail environment. And he won. So that was relatively short-lived. But I transitioned from the potential success of a Ferrari showroom to the unlimited success of a Lotus Alfa Romeo showroom.
Oh, boy. That was before Consumer Reports had been invented, right? Before J.D. Power had been invented. Before right,
this may have been before print was invented.
You make all your money in the shop, in the fix-it shop back there. That's what those guys...
Well, we were aligned with a Lincoln Mercury store, which went back to Ford, and shock of all shocks, the Ford people weren't interested in maintaining a Lotus Alfa Romeo presence on their property. So that was good.
Were people actually buying Lotus and Alfas in Texas?
We sold one or two of the Lotus, and which I think was actually a pretty good track record. Lotus was in the news, and we can get to this when we discuss tariffs later, Mark. But Lotus, if they had the consistent approach to marketing that they have to designing and building their automobiles, they'd be a spectacular success.
Every Lotus I've ever driven, and I've driven, I think, everything in the last 30 years, has just been really well engineered and a lot of fun to drive. But I got to ask you, in your role as a car sales guy, you guys, the sales guys, knew a lot more than almost all the customers. Is that right?
that's may have been correct then. I like to think that I could do an absolutely amazing walk around of a BMW product, largely because I had spent the year as a sales assistant listening to very good salespeople do amazing walkarounds of the sales product.
So people aren't, when people go into a dealership, they're not necessarily going to get ripped off. I mean, the guy is often there just to sell them a car, right?
The guy on the showroom, the sales guy, generally speaking, has their best interests at heart.
But why would he? I mean, the incentive is for him to like add rust sealant and stuff, right?
That's in the F&I office.
Oh, that's not you. Okay.
Yes.
You hate to draw generalizations, but the F&I people are of a different breed than the full showroom floor.
That's one of the secrets, right, David? That it's in the F&I. It's not in the sales guy.
Yeah. I don't think there are many dealerships that operate on the profit generated on the sales floor.
Yeah.
They operate on the profits generated in the F&I department and then obviously on the service truck.
F&I standing for financing and insurance.
That's correct.
So what's your tip to people who want to buy a car and don't want to get, not that you would get ripped off, but don't want to get ripped off?
Yeah.
Well, I think line up with your financing ahead of time. That doesn't preclude you going into the F&I department and seeing what they can do for you. But at least you go in knowing that you've got financing approval from ideally a credit union or a banker in the family. You've got that in the pocket, so to speak. And then generally speaking, and I'm laughing because my wife and I bought a new Jeep 18 months ago. And knowing that we were going to hold on to it for a long time, we pretty much bought everything. Even those things that an idiot wouldn't buy, we bought on the premise that this was a somewhat complicated vehicle. We were going to hold on to it for a decade and really didn't want to be bothered down the road with any unintended consequences. But don't do that. Don't do what we did.
Don't buy everything.
So just go. Extended warranty and the clear coat on the front.
Should people get an extended warranty?
I think it depends on the vehicle they're buying.
Did you buy one on your Jeep?
We did, and we've owned a 2006 Jeep for the entire 19 years that we've owned it. And have had very, very few problems with it. Wow. So I wouldn't speak to Jeep as being an unreliable entity, but I think it's probably better to buy an extended warranty on a Stellantis. That's the parent company of Jeep. It's better to buy an extended warranty on that product than it is a Toyota or something similar.
So know your brand.
Right. And know its history.
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot of research.
And if you're going to go into the car business, go in as an F&I manager, Mark.
I would last 4 minutes in there. Okay. Well, thank you. That's a lot of good information about, you know, how to, information about how to buy a car and from a guy who used to sell them. So thank you, David, for that.
We are
almost 8 minutes into the show now. So that's a heck of an introduction to our guest co-host, David Boltz. Thank you again for joining us, David. Let's go to the calendar really quickly because there are some cool things coming up today. Actually, I believe it's this evening at, the Japanese American National Museum has an exhibit at the gallery on the South Campus of Art Center. At the end, right there where the Pasadena Freeway ends, you can see it. They come to that stoplight there, and they have an exhibit there that's really neat. And they're going to have a discussion tonight, a panel discussion. So that would be really cool to see. You can check it out. Learn more about it because we're running low on time here at janm.org, and you can get lots of information about that. Michelle, take us to El Pete, please.
El Pete at the corner of Wilshire and Fairfax, aka the Peterson Automotive Museum, is hosting its All Porsche Cruisin' tomorrow morning starting at 9 o'clock. Now, get there early. Do not get there at 9 o'clock if you're going to go. If you want to be a spectator, it's free of charge. You can just roll up. If you'd like to have general admission along with going and seeing all the Porsches, you can buy a ticket ahead of time for $25 and you'll get a poster along with it. Everybody who shows up gets free coffee and bagels. If you're a member of the museum, it's $14 and that will get you your poster, museum admission, and free parking in the display area of your Porsche. So if you like Porsches,
it's fun. If you have kids, it's fun to have a membership. And they have on the second floor, they have this whole Cars, the movie from Pixar section there.
Oh,
and
good.
You can check that out too.
I didn't know that. I love the movie Cars. So I will go check that
out. You haven't been
to
the Peterson? It's been there for a couple of years. Well, it's really cool.
I haven't seen that exhibit.
And insider information, they don't count how many bagels you eat.
Mm-hmm.
Keep circling back. And they have cream cheese too, which I can't can't eat. Okay, peterson.org. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah, it's always.
So go to peterson.org and check events, and it just goes down. I just wrote something for Auto Week that'll be up as you read this.
Oh.
So check it out at autoweek.com. Okay, Auto Books, everybody's favorite car bookstore, Auto Books, Aero Books, Saturday, September 6th. They are located at 2900 West Magnolia Boulevard in Burbank. By the way, Saturday, September 6th from 11 to 3, they're going to have a guy who's an expert and wrote a book on slot car racing. It's slot car racing and popular culture. Eddie Shorer, a 23-year veteran of slot car racing. I don't know. How do you start out? What was the demarcation line when he started slot car racing?
Most of it.
Looking that long?
You used to be able to do it. Auto Week had a big story way back in, the 80s or something about slot car racing, where we wildly overstated the amount of income these guys had. One of them told me many years later, he said, whatever you guys wrote, I don't know where you got that number. Money. So the whole culture, it's called Slot Car Racing in Popular Culture. And this guy's going to be signing his book at Auto Books Aero Books on Saturday, September 6th from 11 to 3. And since we talked about free bagels at the Peterson, also on Saturday, September 6th at 9:30 a.m. at Pro Italia, the motorcycle shop is going to have
your suitcase in a hand.
And even if you don't have a Ducati, you can go there. It's just a nice, fun gathering of people who like motorcycles. They specialize.
Why don't you use your hand?
Okay, that's confusing enough. But I sneak in with my red Suzuki SV,
no,
which looks like an Italian bike. I'm going to look up. For some reason, I did not write down the exact. Somebody did Google the.
Do you know what city it's in?
It's up in, it's not La Cunada, but it's right by La Cunada. Montrose. It's in Montrose.
Oh, okay.
California. It's that main street as you go down the freeway. Okay, I'm going to keep on. We're going to come back to that in just a second. Motorcycles at Chuck Walla. This is another motorcycle thing. There's a group called Compact Octane. They're holding a motorcycle track weekend, basically, at Chuck Walla Raceway, way the heck out there in the middle of nowhere in the desert. You get on the 10, you go past Palm Springs, Indio, all that stuff. You keep going. It's almost at, what's that called? Churiaca Summit or something. September 6th and 7th. You can click on their bio on both Facebook and Instagram to get more information about it. Chuck Walla Valley Raceway. The actual number is 25300 Rice Road, Desert Center, California. It's just off Interstate 10. And September 6th and 7th, they've got a big motorcycle race weekend. They're going to have, you can camp there if you want. They rent out little gazebos or whatever you call them. There's new track rider orientation. Let's see, you can rent a bike from KTM or CF Moto. CF Moto makes really good track bikes. They have free Alpine Stars loaner gear. You need to make a reservation in advance. They have a bunch of stuff, KYT demo helmets and fitting, bike hauling, and whatever else you need. That's a lot of fun. September 6th and 7th at Chuck Walla Raceway. Michelle, take us to Los Angeles. What, you have the address of Pro Italia? Somebody saying this?
I do. 3319 North Verdugo Road in Glendale. 91208. If you'd like to call them, toll free, 818-249-5707.
Is Glendale close to Montrose?
Yes.
Yes, right next
to San Gabriel Valley.
And the showroom there is just like you died and went to Moto Heaven. It's just a sea of red bikes. It's so cool. They have Aprilia. They have Moto Guzzi, everything.
Nice. So they have fire suits and gloves and shoes and all that stuff too?
Not so much that. They sell the motorcycles mostly.
All right.
So Michelle, take us down to the Orange County.
Well, actually, this is Rancho Dominguez in the South Bay area. LASAAC is going to be at Lions Automobilia Foundation.
That's the Shelby American Automobile Club, right?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for giving us what the letters stand for. I appreciate that.
That's the
course. So you got a Shelby or you like Shelbys, go to the Lions Automobilia Foundation on September 13th. And they're having their 20th annual Tony Sousa Memorial Car Show and 60th anniversary celebration of the GT350 from 9 to 3. So it's almost all day. It looks like a free event, Mark.
It does look like one, doesn't it? But yeah, I think you have to pay to get into the museum, but the museum is worth it. It's a whole history of racing in Southern California. It was founded by a guy who used to go to Lions Drag Strip, which is just right next to the Lions Automobilia Foundation, used to be just down the road from. And this guy had such a good time that he created the Lions Automobilia Foundation to celebrate his wonderful teenage years that he spent at Lions Drag Strip.
Yes.
But it also shows lakes racing and IndyCar and off-road racing. And there's even
sprint cars. Sports. Yeah. 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 There's an Alpha car.
Michelle and I are both in there.
Yes. There's an Alpha car in there. There's sprint cars. There's all kinds of stuff. And don't forget, there's a replica of the Lions Drag Strip inside.
Yeah.
It's amazing with just like spectator stands and everything. So yeah, if you really want to go back in time, and a lot of people just sit there and stare and think, it's interesting.
Yeah. I was amazed. I liked it. I hope it sticks around for a long,
me too.
Long
it's time. A great so. Place.
And I was going to add, I've only been there once, but having been to the Peterson several times, to my way of thinking, if you've been to the Peterson several times and haven't been to the Lions, you owe it to yourself and your fellow enthusiasts to visit the Lions. It's quite a departure from the Peterson, and it's a departure in a nice, involving, engaging way. Anyway, that's my 2 cents.
Thank you.
Okay. Who's taking us? David, you're on our next one, right?
The Santa Monica Classic Car Show at the SM. Is that Santa Monica Pier?
Yes.
Santa Monica Pier, yes.
I'm in LA on a part-time basis, so help me a bit. But it benefits the Pico Youth and Family Center, which is the presenting sponsor, if you will, of the 5th annual Santa Monica Classic Car Show on the Santa Monica Pier. And that is Saturday, September 13th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Assuming that the classics don't rust out with the salt air, I can't imagine a better venue in which to see classics against the beach. And all proceeds benefit the youth services and after-school programming for underserved youth in Santa Monica and Los Angeles County. Can't think of a better way to spend your time. And obviously, I can't think of a better way of spending those monies.
Right. There'll be a lot of lowriders there, which is they're always cool to see.
And you can register at CarShow SM, which again, I think stands for Santa Monica.com. At the eventbrite.com link in bot.
Very good. Thank you, David. Michelle.
Well, if you would like your British cars, there's Boots and Bonnets. That's the British car show happening September 14th. And that one is at the Autry Heritage Museum in Griffith Park, 4700 Western Heritage Way, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on the September 14th. So if you have a Mini or you like Minis, Nortons, Land Rovers, MGs, Jaguars, Bentleys, Rolls-Royce, Triumphs, and Aston Martins, etc., you might want to go to Boots and Bonnets.
Assuming you can get your car to start and it makes it all the way down there.
You can always trailer it.
Speaking of getting your car to start, Machinissima 3 is coming again to downtown L.A., That is a wonderfully curated Italian car show, just full of really cool cars. It started out just a little show down in sort of the Arts District, sort of east of the industrial area of downtown Los Angeles. Then they moved up to the former Lowry Center up there, kind of in northeastern L.A. Now they're back in downtown. Machinissima 3 takes place September 27th at Rolling Greens. D DTLA, which stands for Downtown LA. The address specifically 1005 Mateo Street, Los Angeles, California. More information, Macanissima.com. I do not expect you to be able to spell Macanissima because it is spelled funny. So I will spell it out for you right now. Macanissima. So Macanissima.com. I'm sure Google will help you out with that.
Yeah.
Right.
Will the Lancia be making an appearance?
You know, it has not been invited. I'm not hurt. I'll tell more. I'll talk more about the Lancia and its recent grand triumph. But it's not been invited. I might have to actually apply. Me. I might have to apply. Don't they know who I am?
Right. Don't apply. Come on.
You've got a Lancia with a masculine pronoun mark. Has that ever happened before?
Lancia. Okay. Don't forget the Grand National Truck Show coming September 26th. And 27th, the same guys who put on the Grand National Roadster Show, and it will be in the same location, September 26th and 27th at the Fairplex in Pomona. More information at rodshows.com. Japanese Classic Car Show, Sunday, October 11th, Marina Green Park, Long Beach. And this is the most interesting one of them all. Willow Springs Raceway is going to have sort of a grand reopening, October 11th. So the temps ought to be cooled down, ought to be just perfect. You can go out there and they'll show you around. You have to buy a ticket though. You go to eventbrite.com and I guess you type in Willow Springs or something. So, okay, that's all the calendar we have. So we're only 1 minute over on the calendar.
Well, good. All
we're
right.
Heading to the news. And the first bit of news is stay off of the 405 freeway in West LA. Just, you know, don't go there. They're doing all kinds of construction, closing lanes, doing all kinds of things. The only tip we have for you is that they will not be doing any work during Labor Day weekend, but pretty much other weekends, stay away from the 405 through West LA. Check Caltrans for that. I think it's Caltrans.gov, G-O-V.
Yes. Yeah.
And there's a little box pops up and you type in 405 and it tells you. And you can also type in Highway 1 just to reassure yourself that it is still washed out south of Big Sur.
Darn it.
So there's a little bit of updates. Now, our pal David Bolt has been doing a lot of work trying to dig up some information on tariffs because we've all heard about tariffs. And David was trying to find out whether we can nail down any numbers on it or not, whether it's all still kind of out there. David, what did you find?
Well, I was going to say, Mark, numbers are a little bit elusive, and maybe it's because our current administration, and I know we don't delve into politics here, Mark, but our current administration.
This is KPFK, man.
We're liberal. It's a hippie network.
Well, I was going to suggest it's an administration in which you've got the cabinet shooting from the hip and our president shooting from the lip. And to that end, there's been a lot of discussion with regard to tariffs. But obviously nothing that is hard. And with that, OEMs, the manufacturers themselves, whom I reached out to, generally speaking, if they're willing to comment, willing to return a phone call, it's with these generalities supporting the best initiatives that will provide for the best manufacturing environment in the U.S. The good news is a great many, and this was highlighted by the automotive industry trade group, and I believe it's autos. I'll find that, Mark.
Within NADA?
No. NADA, God bless them, NADA did not return my phone calls.
We don't bless them. If they didn't return your phone call, we're not blessing them.
I only made two, and they've got other things on their mind. But generally speaking, we have in the U.S. a manufacturing footprint by both domestics and imports that's extensive. And as one of these organizations, whose acronym I can't remember, noted, the import nameplates manufacture a greater value in their car business stateside, their car assembly stateside, than the domestics do. And in part, that's because some of the domestics have gone offshore, either in Canada historically or Mexico of late. And obviously, the Toyotas, the Hondas, the Nissans have had manufacturing footprints in the U.S. for well over a quarter of a century. So what they're suggesting in their releases is that the U.S., the administration, take better notice of what's already here and try not to muck up the waters for these people that are manufacturing an incredibly sophisticated entity, which is the modern motor car, and try and simplify that process for increased trade, as opposed to mystifying that process with onerous regulations and tariffs that, frankly, you want to talk Byzantine, administering this stuff, especially as it varies from month to month, has to be a logistical, mathematical nightmare. So what we've got are an agreement with Britain at 15% for the first 100,000 cars. 15% on a $50,000 whatever is still a significant amount of money. And it goes to 25%, I believe, after that 100,000 limit has been reached. The pragmatic aspect of this, if you can get away from the math for a moment, is that the aforementioned Lotus, which has approximately 1,100 employees at their main plant in Hethel, England, is laying off over a third of those employees.
Is that because of the tariffs?
It's because of the economic environment, in part spearheaded by the tariffs. It's not a reflection of the tariffs being imposed. It's also a reflection, I would guess, and I have nothing to prove this with, but Lotus bet heavily on the EV infrastructure back in the day when it looked as if everyone was going in that direction.
Right.
And I suspect they've made some outlays that at this point in time, they can't really cash those checks.
Yeah. We could do a whole show on Lotus and just remember all the supercars that they're going to make, the hypercars, electric 1,000 horsepower things. Maybe we'll dig into that for a future show. You're like, what's the status of Lotus, you know?
Well, and if I'm allowed to guess, I'll go back to the first Lotus road test I read, which was in the mid-60s with Tom McCahill at Mechanics Illustrated doing the testing. And how Uncle Tom fit into a Lotus Elan is utterly beyond me. But he did, and it spurred my interest in those cars ever since.
Oh, interesting. Right. Any news on the rest of the EU, the rest of the people, the car companies that are in or that will be involved with EU negotiations with the administration?
Well, I was going to say I didn't find anything recent, but it looks as if most members of the EU are satisfied with the progress that is being made in those talks. And at the same time, you know, you're making progress on one end. And then Mark sent me something from Automotive News Today with regard to impositions of tariffs, increased tariffs on machinery. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about the recent nature of tariffs, In digging up, I was reminded that the chicken tax, which is why we don't have large pickups imported into the U.S. from Europe, is because of the chicken tax, which dates back to 1964.
But they don't have large pickup trucks in Europe,
but,
do they?
But it prohibits the export or the import into the U.S. of any pickups that are assembled in Europe.
Didn't the chicken tax in the founding of the chicken tax was not based on auto industry, but it wound up applying to it and still applied? So it had something to do with some reciprocal tax on poultry or some crazy thing, didn't it?
The Europeans didn't want poultry into the European market, our poultry into the European market. So they levied a tax on it. And then we levied a tax on their pickup trucks.
For payback.
David, having dug around a bit in the tariff world there, or the whatever you would call this crazy tariffs that we have back and forth all the time nowadays, what is your take on tariffs?
I don't understand. Again, veering a little bit into the political, we've got a Republican administration that, generally speaking, historically has wanted unfettered capitalism. Let's just do what we want. Let's keep taxation to a minimum, maximize trade, and those opportunities that a maximizing of trade gives U.S. companies. With tariffs, we're veering in Scandinavia, you know, the socialist communist Scandinavians, where they put a value-added tax that's onerous on most new automobiles to the point that people really don't buy new automobiles in those countries to any significant extent. So when you levy a car that already has a median sales price of $45,000 to $50,000 here in the U.S., you limit the consumer choice by extending tariffs of 15 to 25% on imported goods. You've made this Byzantine accounting procedure on those cars that might be assembled in the U.S., but then use foreign source parts for those assemblies. And now I read they're going to rebate after 1 or 2 years a portion of that tariff on those cars at a declining percentage. And I know that doesn't make sense. I know I'm not explaining it clearly, but it doesn't read clearly. To answer your question, Mark, I just don't understand in this economic environment why we're making consumer goods like automobiles more expensive than they already are.
Did you find any examples where you could say the Audi A4 pays this much in a tariff? Could you read off just a couple of those random examples?
Sure. If Audi is a great example, just by virtue of the fact that they have announced a strategy to combat the tariffs, and it varies based on the model. I think it goes from as little as about $800 for the entry-level sedans to about $3,500 on what admittedly is a low-volume luxury product, the A8 sedan. So it is variable, but it is significant. And by the way, Autos Drive America is the trade association I was referring to with regard to their stance that they just want to see something positive done.
So the tariff added to an Audi A8, which is that big luxury car, is $8,000?
I believe that's the number.
Okay, and the A4 is how much?
Is as little as $1,800.
Okay. Yeah, that's not as terrible as I thought it would be.
Well, and companies like Toyota, I didn't read this recently, but I read it within recent memory. Of course, I can only remember till last Tuesday. But Toyota...
The second thing to go, you know, memory.
Or at least that's what I've remembered.
I can't remember what the first was. Okay, I'll be here all week. Thanks.
Don't go there.
Toyota has enough volume that they can essentially spread the tariff impact, which I think in this fiscal year for Toyota is about $9 billion.
Ooh. They paid $9 billion in a 12-month period on tariffs?
That's correct.
Well, that's probably a lot of Lexus because Toyota has had manufacturing in the U.S. for forever.
That's correct. But they've been able to average that out based on their volume to the point that the impact per car is relatively small. So they've got the ability just based on sheer volume to amortize it, whereas most car companies, especially the smaller importers, do not.
Okay. So like Toyota, they manufacture, say, Camrys and RAV4s and Highlanders. They probably manufacture them in the U.S. at Georgetown or Georgetown 2 or someplace like that. So those aren't affected. So what would be, like, give me a couple more examples of, like, say, a Japanese car. Pick one and say what the tariff is.
Yeah, I was just in a Korean car, a Kia Telluride, and it's assembled in West Point, Georgia, I believe. I know it's assembled in the Southeast. I know it's assembled using non-UAW labor. And it has about 70% domestic content. Its engine comes from Korea. Transmission is made in the U.S. But they're going to incur a tariff on that portion of the product that's not manufactured in the U.S. And when you talk about a Toyota, I know very well their manufacturing footprint, their assembly footprint in the U.S. is quite significant, but they're still using componentry from Mexico, from Canada, and from Japan.
And so you get a tariff? Well, like how much do they pay on a tariff for, say, that Kia Telluride that you just spoke of?
I'm afraid I didn't get that.
Oh, okay. All right. So it sounds like it's relatively small, like $800 for the Audi A4. I mean, that's not, I mean, you're going to have to pay that in F&I for something. So,
well, unless you follow my advice and don't go to the F&I department without pre-approved financing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good.
But
very good.
PR wise, this, I mean, we broke it down, right? Or David did, so that we can see that it's maybe 800 or 1,000, but from the PR perspective, the American public doesn't know that, and they're freaked out about new cars. So that's why we're seeing all these prices rising in the used car market.
That's entirely correct. You've got far more interest in used cars at this moment than you have over the last 2 years. Used cars spiked, as I understand it, during the COVID period, where the supply lines of new cars was impacted. So you had more interest in used cars because you had greater availability in used cars. And that seems to be coming back, Michelle, because of people's concerns about the future, but also very real economic concerns regarding the present.
Okay. Well, thanks for bringing up all that stuff, Carl. I called him Carl.
Dave.
I'm never going to write that down. David Bolt.
Thank you, David. And David, what outlet are you with? Where should we plug you?
Well, I was going to say, if you look for my reviews, their new car reviews at txgarage.com. That's txgarage.com, where I have spent most of my adulthood. But at this point in time, I don't live there.
Okay. Say again, TX.
TXGarage.com.
There it is. Okay.
Thank you, David. Not Carl, David. Let's go on. Mercedes is going. Now, we've all heard about I don't want to say the rise and fall of electric cars, but, you know, the rise and plateau of electric cars. It seemed, 4 years ago that the future was going to be electric. Everything was going to be electric. A lot of car companies sort of based their product plans on that. And here's an example of one that is not pulling back, but adjusting to the market realities. That I read this in Automotive News because I pay $200 a year to be able to read some of the articles on automotivenews.com. Autonews.com is their website. Some of the articles, I can't get the data that they print. I can't get a lot of it. Okay, I'm done whining, but I will say autoweek.com is free for everybody. You can read everything you want at autoweek.com. There, I'm done. I'm off my soapbox. We're getting back to the subject matter. Mercedes, according to Automotive News, Mercedes is going with a mix of EV and ICE cars in the future. Mercedes said it will deliver new and significantly updated models to its showrooms globally by the end of 2027. And that means, as you break it down, 19 combustion engine and 17 battery electric. So 17 battery electric, that's still a lot. So that's almost parity. It's almost half. I wonder if they're going to be able to sell those because they just dialed back on the number of their big electric cars, the S-Class sedan and a couple of others. So we'll see. But according to Automotive News, again, Mercedes has told U.S. retailers it will be, quote, flexible and tactical, unquote, with its powertrain strategy. So whatever is selling is what they're going to make. Future models will share platforms and support gasoline only hybrid and electric powertrains. So whatever you want, Mercedes will make. And I imagine that a lot of other car makers are probably going somewhere along those lines. They have to sort of adjust to the reality of the American market and the global market. You know, it's not fully ready for electric cars. Because why? Who knows?
Well, charging infrastructure and range anxiety are still probably the two significant aspects.
Well, may I just address that? I just wrote a story just before coming on here that will be on. It should be by the time you listen to this radio show, it should be up on the site, autoweek.com, which is free, by the way, not like Automotive News. Autoweek is free. Addressed that very topic. And, it's constantly evolving. Let's just say that. Constantly evolving.
I don't pay much attention to Mercedes, honestly. Do they even have a hybrid already out there?
Oh, I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
But don't be too sure. Look it up in the Automotive News.
I just can't think of one off the top of my head. And I think they either have the EV or they have the ICE. And that's it. I don't remember. But I am blonde. And like I said, I don't pay that much attention to Mercedes, but it just doesn't seem to me like they have a hybrid.
Okay. Well, who knows?
So everyone else seems to be jumping in the hybrid lane.
David, you mentioned the charging infrastructure. Now we have all been frustrated out in the middle of nowhere, calling the 800 number, trying to get somebody to make the charger go beep and charge your car.
Yes.
It is, according to JD Power in the last 2 months came out with two different surveys where they looked at customer satisfaction with the EV charging network. And one thing that I found that was quite interesting, actually, before I get to that, the report said that while nationwide, 59% of vehicle shoppers say they are either very likely or somewhat likely to consider purchasing an electric vehicle, it found that those who do have vehicles, electric vehicles, among those people who own them, they are the dissatisfaction with the charging network, the public charging network, is as low as 16%. So the vast majority of people, let's just round it off to 85%, are satisfied with the public charging network. Now, if you take that even further, most people charge an electric car. Most people who own electric cars charge them at home. So, right. You know, I that would lead me to extrapolate, not being a mathematician, extrapolate that people are happy with their electric cars and charging them. I myself, as I've said many times, I own two electric cars, and I'm perfectly happy with them. They don't have any range at all. And you don't need that much range. The Mitsubishi iMiEV has maybe 50 miles range, but for 90 something percent of your tasks, that's all the range that you need.
And if you have to push it, it's small and light. You can push it, or your wife can
see. This is Carl. This is Carl Brower. This is what Cara would say.
This is, you know, exactly what he would say.
If I could.
Windmills give you the common cold. Let's just go with all of his. Anyway,
plus they're
his tropes. Yes,
they're unsightly.
Yeah, they are unsightly at your golf course, and so you
They come into your house and they steal your TV set. Is what I heard. Mm-hmm. Windmills do. All right, so. We are, where are we now? We're at 41 minutes.
We were on the Mercedes story.
Yes. Okay. Oh, you want more information about Mercedes? Okay. With sales of EVs slowing and uncertainty about future regulations in the European Union and in the U.S., as we were talking about just a little while ago, Mercedes said it is essential to preserve powertrain choices and continue investing in internal combustion engine technology. Now, they said maybe 5 years ago that eventually there would be no more internal combustion engines at Mercedes. And they are saying now, yep, we're going to do it. And I'm choosing Mercedes here, first of all, because it was easy to pull it off of Automotive News, where I pay $200 a year and to read these things. But I think it's, in a way, it's probably representative of a lot of car companies, though Mercedes did go farther in to the EV build out than I think maybe anybody else, except for Tesla, you know. I think they probably got a lot more of them there. So other companies that didn't go as far into populating their lineup with electric cars, you know, they're coming at it from another. They don't have to dial back. They're still deciding how to ramp up and at what rate to ramp up.
Well, remember, Volvo kind of started this whole thing. And where are they at?
We can blame Volvo. That's always
exactly. I test drove a couple Volvos last year and they were not EVs. So I guess they're still making internal combustion.
I've driven a couple of the Volvo EVs and the Polestars, and they're very comfortable, nice. I think the Polestars are unfortunately styled. Is that a polite way of saying it? Why do they make those shapes? Why?
Because it's Volvo.
No, Volvo's, you know, the old boxy but good is fine. I don't care. But
the clunky old shoes thing. Yeah, I know.
Sorry, just doesn't look. I mean, maybe for a planter or something, but not a car.
I don't understand Polestar window stickers, and I'm sure it's because I'm not sophisticated enough to understand them. But when you've got those electrified sedans typically selling for $45,000 to $60,000, and Polestar hits you in the face with $70,000 and $80,000, on what are essentially Volvo products.
I'm made in China.
Well, I did have an EX40 and maybe 6 months ago and enjoyed the heck out of the EX40.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
The footprint was great. Yeah. Very comfortable. Range was satisfactory.
They're quiet. Yeah. I have an Ioniq 9 right now and they just dropped it off and I'm loving it. Drove it down to, you know, pick up another car, and it was just comfortable, and I loved it. Okay, we are we have to move out of news and into reviews. We are a little bit overdone on our news time. So, Michelle, can we get back to Michael Jordan next week?
Oh, of course, yes. Next week, we'll bring you the status of the Michael Jordan lawsuit against NASCAR.
Okay, Michael Jordan, the basketball great, tried to get into NASCAR. You know, he tried baseball, Didn't work there. Tried getting into NASCAR, having some trouble there. We'll bring up to date on that from our staff attorney, Michelle Spencer. Thank you, Michelle. But I want to, we're into the reviews section here, and I want to quickly just say the San Marino Motor Classic was last weekend, and I had, as always, it is a great show. It's put on by Aaron Weiss, whom we had on the show last week, chatting away. He's a great guy. He and his family do so much work to put that on. It was held in Lacey Park in San Marino. Normally, on the weekends, they don't let non-residents into Lacey Park unless they pay like $4 or $5. That's almost as much as it costs to get an Automotive News subscription to get a lot more at Lacey Park. So for $50, you could get into the San Marino Motor Classic, as it's called. This was the 14th running of that. It was just fun. The problem, of course, Aaron Weiss holds it the week after Pebble Beach. So to encourage Pebble Beach entrants to bring their cars down to San Marino. And indeed, this year, the Best of Show post-war at San Marino Motor Classic went to just a gorgeous, gorgeous car. It had paint that was about a foot thick, I think, at the very least. It was a Ghia Chrysler that had won its class at Pebble. And that looked it looked just gorgeous. You can see my story at AutoWeek.com for free. But I will say the problem, the drawback, and the reason that I say the problem with having it 1 week after Pebble is that Pebble Beach is right on the ocean, and it's 66 degrees year-round, no matter what, at Pebble Beach. In San Marino, which is kind of like inland a lot, your proximity to the continental landmass is affecting your temperatures. So summertime is, I think the scientific term is hotter than high Hades. It was bumping up against 100 degrees, and a lot of people didn't show up. So a lot of cars didn't show up. So the big central area of Lacey Park, which is 35 acres, you used to have Ferraris on it, and the Ferrari Club pulled out, and they now have Concorso Ferrari up on Colorado Boulevard. So it was lacking some cars, lacking a lot of people, but the perimeter of the lawn at Lacey Park is just these wonderful oak trees, and you get some shade there. It's nice. And I will say I entered the Lancia Appia there, and guess what? It was on the podium. It got third in its class. It was the post-war preservation class. It got third place. I got a little plaque. I got to drive up, you know, and have former host of the car show here, you know, say a few nice words about it, along with Ed Justice Jr. I plugged the car show as I screamed it out the window. And there were, again, I will say I met several car show listeners. And hello, guys. Thank you. They came up and said hello. It was so nice to meet those guys. They're just enthusiastic, wonderful people. And, you know, you can't see them when you're here in the studio or wherever you are. But they're out there, they're listening, and we appreciate all of you. And thank you for coming up and saying hello to my wonderful classic Lancia.
And that's a 1960?
61 Lancia Appia, four door, no B pillar. The suicide doors open up, no B pillar. It's got a V4 engine.
In 61, were they still built by fascists or communists?
Carl is here. See, we don't need Carl doesn't have to come back because we have him here. The staff Republican, God. David Bolt, is here. Also, a great grasp of history, David. 1961, I think they had renounced both communism and fascism.
It was over by then, David.
It was over, David. We encourage you and Carl to read some history. But anyway, okay, with that introduction, we now turn it over to Carl, who's going to tell us he's going to continue the review section here and tell us about his time in a Jeep. Oh, a Jeep Electric.
Oh, boy.
We'll look for our earlier conversation.
Okay, Carl / David.
Lightning is going to strike. Go ahead.
Well, I would tell you, first and foremost, my 700 words on this, and I'm not sure if the time allows 700 words.
We don't know. You can do 42 words.
Very good. Very good. It was nice. But the 700,
you actually have 9 minutes.
The 700 words can be found at txgarage.com.
And if you take up txgarage.com, let's say that 42 more times. If you take up the full 9 minutes, I don't have to do my review of the Toyota Sienna minivan, but I still might.
We want to hear that also, Mark. Yeah.
Take it away, David.
So let me try and arrive at a happy balance here. First and foremost, if there's a disconnect between me and Jeep's Wagoneer S EV, it's the fact that, one, they call it a Jeep. My wife and I, as I write at txgarage.com, and that's available free, as I write there, my wife and I have been Jeep owners since 1987, continuously since 1998. So we like to think we know a little bit about Jeeps and what motivates buyers to be attracted to the product. One of those significant motivations, even though we're hard-pressed to take our Jeeps on anything rougher than a gravel driveway, is the fact that you can go outward bound in a Jeep. It gives you an ability to escape the urban scrum, even the suburban scrum, and explore some roads and byways that you might not actually partake in a conventional automobile. Our 98 Grand Cherokee was great at that. The 06 Grand Cherokee that we still own is great with that and comes with a Hemi, so we can do all of this outbound adventuring at 12 miles per gallon. And we've got a plug-in Grand Cherokee, which, despite the fact that there were more software recalls in its first year of ownership than I would have thought possible in a 5,000-pound automobile, despite that, we're generally speaking very happy with the ownership process. And we're happy with the fact that it does suggest some outward direction in your ownership. This Wagoneer S, which builds on the Wagoneer nameplate, which is affixed to a body-on-frame suburban competitor that Stellantis markets.
It's a big vehicle, right? The Wagoneer is full-size SUV, right?
Yeah, it's the stupid full-size SUV.
Stupid full-size. So it has a stupid class has like it was this body-on-frame, and it's basically the size, and they converted that. Did they convert it to electric power, or did they build it based on electric power?
That's why I don't understand the Jeep nameplate, because I'm not sure that this platform should be called a Jeep. And they call it a Wagoneer S to distinguish it from the big, stupid Wagoneer. And I say stupid, they're selling some Wagoneers, but frankly, GM does the Suburban so well, and Ford does the Expedition reasonably well. I just can't imagine a compelling reason for a customer to walk into a Stellantis showroom and say, I've looked at the Suburban, I've looked at the Expedition, and I want a Wagoneer. I just can't fathom that. So, but the confusion is their EV, which is a unibody structure, two motors, one front, one rear, and is styled very attractively in somewhat of a benign way. They call it a Jeep, despite the only thing associated with Jeep architecture is its front grille. So you've got that. But within the realm of an EV, four doors, rear hatch, crossover profile, it's comfortable, it's sublime. The 500 horsepower in the standard powertrain is way more than enough for somebody to accelerate with assurance onto a freeway and to cruise comfortably, as EVs do, other than perhaps your Mitsubishi, at 80 miles an hour. Range, the EPA rates it at an estimate 294 miles. At my home charging, level two charging unit, which in California, the process is unplug the dryer and plug in the level two charger that I borrowed from my son-in-law. And that gets us up to 250 miles consistently. I never saw the 294 that the EPA estimates, despite it showing a full charge. But that 250 miles is fine. And Car and Driver in this category, which includes Hyundai's three-row, Kia's three-row, the Honda Prologue, and a couple of others, they rated the Jeep product as fifth in this lineup, citing a somewhat bumpy ride, which I didn't experience, and the fact that it sells for about 10 grand more than its supposed immediate competition. This is a $70,000 product. It's a $70,000 product in today's EV environment, which means if you go online, you can find sale prices in the low to mid 40s within about 5 seconds. And that probably tells you more than anything you need to know about the reception for a new competent EV today in today's EV market.
But so it has it's powered by electric motors, and those get 100% of their torque as soon as they start turning. I would think that would be a good off-road feature to have. And also, it's probably raised up enough. So, I mean, it sounds like you should be able to go off-roading in this.
You've got an adjustable suspension that gives you a little bit of additional ground clearance, Mark, but the departure angles are ridiculous. It's got too much front overhang. The beauty of a Rivian, in my view, the beauty of the Land Rover, Range Rover family is the setback on the chassis. You've got very little front overhang, very little rear overhang, and by virtue of that, you can approach and depart in a pretty aggressive fashion. The Wagoneer S doesn't benefit from any of that. It sits there like a Honda Prologue. And, you know, a Honda Prologue is going to do fine, which is Honda's crossover EV, full EV. Those are going to do fine on gravel roads or fire roads or something like that. And the Wagoneer S would ostensibly do the same thing. Fine on the gravel, fine on the fire trail. But, you know, with a Jeep brand, you expect to have more than that. And this Wagoneer S isn't going to deliver.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's got to hurt. Stellantis, that could put the last nail in the coffin of Stellantis. David Bolt did it, ladies and gentlemen. If you want to know what happened to your Chrysler, we'll give you David Bolt's home address soon.
As long as you stay in the suburbs, you're good. From what I heard on that review.
And if you, absolutely, if you're buying something that's just a competent EV and you're comfortable with a $60,000 to $70,000 transaction price and probably can have it for less, this is a very commendable vehicle. It just ain't a Jeep. And with Chrysler only building one model, the Pacifica, I don't know why they didn't give it to Chrysler as a brand. So, yeah.
Oh, very interesting. Okay.
Jeep has a new CEO within the last couple of months, and he apparently is there to correct some previous errors, and I would describe this particular product as one of those.
Oh, all right. There you go. Quickly, we'll move on to the Toyota Sienna. Now, I had my choice of vehicles that I could drive up to the Monterey Car Week, and one consideration was that due to terrible planning on my part, I have a minute and a half here, I had to actually sleep in a vehicle the first night, and I chose the Toyota Sienna minivan. The rear, the third row seats fold flat. The middle captain's chairs in my Sienna did not fold flat, did not get out of the way, so my feet were like crammed in between them. I did not get roused by the cops in the middle of the night. And, you know, it held lots. I wish I should have brought like a bicycle or a motorcycle or something, because minivans are cool. I have less than a minute to go here. I will say that all of the Toyota Sienna minivans now are hybrids. They're all hybrid electric vehicles, front engine, all wheel drive, 7-passenger, 4-door van. Prices range from just about 52 to let's just say it starts at 52. The powertrain, of course, you get a 2.5 liter inline 4. It's nice. I gotta say, I like vans. We have a Eurovan camper here in the Vaughn family driveway, and we like it. I think people have to look at vans again, look at the VW ID Buzz, consider them, but also consider, I enjoyed the Sienna on that long drive. And that is the final word. We are out of time. Stick around for Rhapsody in Black, a great music that sounds great on your car stereo. Thank you, Wendell. And we will see you guys next week on The Car Show.
Support for KPFK comes in part from the Levitt Pavilion Los Angeles, presenting outdoor concerts starting Saturday, June 28th through August 30th in MacArthur Park. The mission of Levitt Pavilion Los Angeles is to make live music accessible to all, creating stronger and more connected communities while celebrating the diversity of our city and beyond. Further information is available at levittlosangeles.org. That's levittlosangeles.org and kpfk.org.
Hey, Have you joined KPFK's Sustainer Circle yet? It's the best and easiest way to support the broadcast on KPFK, heard Mondays right here at 3 p.m. and 5 days a week via the KPFK archives. Please go to kpfk.org, click donate, and become a Sustainer Circle member today. Pledge any amount you like and help me, Brad Friedman of the broadcast, keep reporting the truth about your elections, your government, your media, and your planet, right here on KPFK, your only real independent voice on the airwaves in Los Angeles.